You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today I'm going to cover three stories, but I do have a rather limited amount of time to do that. So if I don't get through all three, I'll save the last one for tomorrow, because tomorrow is Tuesday, and usually on Tuesday it's a short show because of other activities that I'm involved in. And we won't be having a show Friday, so the long show most likely will be Thursday. So for those that are regular listeners, I just wanted to give you that heads up. The stories I'm going to cover, two of them are related, and it's interesting, they all in one way involve religion, which I normally don't really focus in on at all. Now, there was a meeting of the Arab League several days ago, and that is primarily, well, they're Arabs and they're Sunnis. So their ethnicity is Arab. They're not Persian. They're not Turkish or Kurdish or Pakistani. They're Arabs. But what's more important is the religion, Islamic, but they're in the majority branch, namely Sunni. Now, why were they meeting? And it's something that I've been talking about in past shows. The Arab nations, that includes Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Egypt, the United Arab Emirates, just to name a few, are threatened and feel threatened about Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, because that nation is trying to develop nuclear weapons. And the only country in the Middle East today that has nuclear weapons is Israel. Now, you're going to get, if you try to look as to the number of nuclear weapons Israel has, some reports will say 80, some will say 100, others will say somewhere between 300 to 500. I don't know what the number is. And the Israelis aren't talking. That's something they really don't talk about. But they do have fighter aircraft, missiles, submarines that are equipped with weapons that they can put nuclear bombs on, and they have quite a few of them. Now, you need to understand, Israel is a small country with a small population, under 7 million. I think it's a little over 6 million that are Israeli Jewish citizens. And they're surrounded by nations that several want to just wipe them off the surface of the earth. So they have to have a strong defense, and they do. They have a strong military, especially their army and air force, and they have a lot of capability. But when you put it in perspective of they're surrounded by nations that in the past, and some even continuing today, that if they had the possibility of destroying Israel would. What's important is Israel has not engaged worldwide in terrorist activities, unlike Iran. Iran has been killing Americans for over 30 years. Now, much of that killing is through proxies, such as Hezbollah in Lebanon, now in Syria, but also by providing improvised explosive devices, IEDs, that were used extensively in Iraq and to a certain extent in Afghanistan to blow up vehicles that went over these devices or near these devices. They're like landmines. They bury them in the road, and when a vehicle goes over it, they explode it, and it usually results in, if the vehicle's right on top of it, that the people in the vehicles are either killed or seriously wounded. And at least several hundred of our military, when they were in Iraq, were killed by these devices, explosive devices. And they were produced in a plant in Iran. The first story will deal with what is the Arab League doing. Now, related to that is the second story concerning the negotiations that are happening today in Switzerland. The deadline is tomorrow to first establish a framework for negotiations, with the end of June being the date for actually having a treaty or an agreement. I don't favor, first of all, even sitting down with the Iranians, for the simple reason they have a history in the past of using these negotiations to stall. They're buying time so they can further the development of the nuclear weapons. And the key component that they need is enriched uranium. You have two ways to go for a bomb. You could either use plutonium from a nuclear reactor, or you can enrich uranium. And they're separate designs, by the way. So nuclear fuel, or the core of the weapon, requires first the production of enriched uranium, over 90% enriched, as opposed to uranium that you could use to power a nuclear reactor, which only needs to be enriched, depending on the reactor, between 3 and 5%, usually in a low 3%. And if you want to do medical research, isotope type research, you would need to enrich it to about 20%. So when you're going for enriched uranium at the 90% level or higher, you're going for a nuclear weapon. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. And we don't know how much enriched uranium at that level Iran has. That needs to be disclosed and really disposed of, as well as the fact they have thousands of centrifuges that are used to make this enriched uranium. And what the Iranian government has done in the past is hide their nuclear capabilities underground, and only luckily, after several years, that have, for example, one of the facilities was found. I have no doubts that the Iranian government today has secret facilities that neither Israel, the United States, or any of the Western nations know about. So what should we be doing regarding that treaty, or at least the steps now taken to negotiate a treaty? As far as I'm concerned, we should walk away. Walk away, Kerry, because they don't negotiate in good faith. The objective should be to stop nuclear proliferation in the Middle East. That should be the objective. Because if you don't stop it, what's going to happen, and it's related to the first story, once Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Turkey, and other nations clearly understand and have knowledge of the fact that Iran has a nuclear weapon that can be put on a missile and exploded in their nation, you will have an arms race, a nuclear arms race in the Middle East. So the goal should be to stop nuclear proliferation, not delaying Iran having a nuclear weapon for 10 years. And you need to take that approach. So if you're not going to eliminate the machines, the centrifuges that you need to get the enriched uranium, you're not really doing the job. And you also need surveillance and periodic inspections, surprise inspections. And Iran has to agree to all this. And from the leaks that are coming out of the negotiations, they're resisting it. So they've just been, true to form, delaying. So that's the second story I'll give you additional opinions on or comments. The third story, again, involves religion, but it's in the United States. Indiana passed last week a Religious Freedom Act, Religious Freedom Restoration Act, that is not quite, but near identical to, first of all, the federal government passed such an act in 1993 when President Clinton was in office. And this was proposed by and passed by the Democratic Party. Republicans voted for it, too. The vote in the Senate, for example, was 97-3. It was unanimously passed in the House. And what 19 other states, now 20 with Indiana, have done is passed their own version of this act. I give you that history because it's 10 to pass over, because what's happening today? And I will be the first to say public opinion to a certain extent has changed on this. I don't think anywhere near the extent that many Democrats would like to think regarding same-sex marriages. But gays and lesbians have attacked the passage and the signing of this bill by Governor Mike Pence. And I'll just say as an aside, he's one of several people that I think will be running for the presidency. And he's on my short list. You haven't heard much about him because he hasn't announced. I think many that are running probably will not announce until the middle of this year, namely in the second to third quarter, if they're going to run at all. So in the next coming months, we will have periodically news that people have thought about running will either say, I'm going to run or I'm not going to run. And one possibility is Governor Mike Pence. Now, Mike Pence signed the Indiana version of the Religious Freedom Restoration Law into law. And he made very, very clear there was no, the intention of the law was not to discriminate against gays and lesbians, but that's what the Democratic Party and the gays and lesbians are trying to make this out to be, that this was an attempt to discriminate against gays and lesbians, when it wasn't. It was Indiana's version of a law that was passed by the federal government and has in turn been passed by 19 states. So over 20 states have passed similar laws, and there are other states, there's an additional 10, that have similar type legislation. You won't necessarily call it a religious freedom restoration, but they have laws that reflect that. So that's in the news. And my own thinking is, if Indiana wants to pass this act, I'm all for it. Because the problem, the reason why the federal government passed the law, as well as states, is governments are infringing upon the rights of people to practice their religion by mandating certain requirements that put a burden on people of those faiths. So in general, I support the religious freedom restoration laws of the various states. We have it in Texas. And I do have some information as to which states have it and which states don't. And it's no surprise. Usually the Republican states do. The Democratic states don't. So I'm going to have some comments about that, because I think this whole story has been overblown. The media, the mainstream media, is misleading the people. They do that all the time, but they're trying to make this as Indiana is discriminating against gays and lesbians. How dare they? No, they're not. They're passing a version of the Religious Freedom and Restoration Act of 1993 that was really advocated by progressives, liberals, in the Democratic Congress. Remember, in 1993, the Democrats controlled the House and Senate, and President Clinton was president, and he signed the bill. And I might have some comments, if we have time, as to why he did it. What's the background? And there's a lot of background here, and I don't want to spend, at least right now, a lot of time on the background. But you need to understand that we had a federal law passed by Congress, overwhelmingly passed by Congress, and it's been on the books over 20 years, and other states have in turn passed similar laws, not all of them, but many of them. And the reason why is to protect religions, whether it's Christian, Jewish, Muslim, whatever, against government passed laws or mandates that definitely infringe upon the practice of that religion. In other words, it very much challenges the person's First Amendment rights. And the fact that the government should not establish a religion, and what they're doing is interfering with that religion. Now, you have, offsetting that, is people do have civil rights, and you don't want discrimination to be practiced. And the problem is, you have people that feel very strongly, for example, against abortion and against same-sex marriages that are in various businesses. Let's take the same-sex marriage for a moment. Let's say you're a florist, a bakery, a photographer, and someone comes in your store or place of business and wants to hire you. Now, most people, if you're in business, you're in business to make money, and you welcome new business. You don't turn business away. But as a result of talking with the prospect, you learn that this is for a same-sex marriage. Either two men want to get married or two women want to get married, and your religious faith that is considered a sin, it's against your religion, and you say, I'm sorry, sir or ma'am, I wish you well, but it's against my faith, it's considered a sin, an offense against God, and because of that, I'll have to decline your business. Now, the gays and the lesbians will say, well, you're discriminating against me. I would say no. You're trying to impose your lifestyle on them, because what happens? What if you did that and turned their business away? And some have. What the gays and lesbians have done have sued those businesses and won the cases. So if you're a small business owner, that could literally put you out of business. And it's not because you don't want their business. It's because you feel strongly about your religion. So that's the issue, and it's a real issue. But the intent of the law was not to discriminate against gays and lesbians or transsexual. It was really to mirror the laws in other states as well as the federal law. Now, some will say, well, it's a federal law. You don't need to pass the law. Well, that's true to a certain extent. But the key is in the implementation of it. And this gives the right of people of faith to go into court and challenge any attempt by the government to impose certain practices that a religion, no matter what it is, would be considered offensive to that religion. It was not intended to discriminate against gays, blacks, or transsexuals. So those are the three stories I want to cover. And I'm looking at the clock. I might have 10 minutes to 15. I'm not sure when they're going to insist that I leave, but let me cover what's in the news today. Saudi Arabia has an Air Force. I believe they have F-15s. They have several types of aircraft, let's put it at that. And they're using their aircraft today, as they have in the last couple of days, to attack Shia. I always have trouble pronouncing the name of these people. They're in Yemen, and they're in a part of Yemen. They're Shia. The key point here is they're Shia in Yemen. There are also a lot of Sunnis in Yemen. So it depends in the area you're talking about, where are the Shia and where are the Sunnis. Now, what I've done, for those that are new listeners to the show, the way you listen to the show is go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. And at the very top, you'll have a photograph of yours truly in the studio, but underneath you'll have links to the most recent shows, 60 to 80 shows. At the very bottom of the same page, you'll have links to all the shows. But in between, you'll have my show prep. That will include photographs, charts, graphs, YouTube videos, articles. What I think it's important here is to understand how many people in what nations do have Sunni Muslims and Shia Muslims. The important point is the Shia are a majority, over 90%, somewhere between 90 and 95% of the people of Iran are Shia Muslims. If you go to Iraq, I thought I was going to get a bigger image, but I'm not. If you go to Iraq, it's somewhere between 60 and 70%. I've seen different numbers, but about 60 to 65%. One of the maps says 65 to 70%, but I've seen lower numbers. The point is this. In Iraq, the majority are Shia as well, but there's a difference. They're Arabs. But the overriding issue here is religion. What religious sect do you belong to? Now, what you need to understand about Iraq is under Saddam Hussein, the dictator, that was overthrown by the Americans, he was Sunni, and the minority in Iraq are Sunni. So for decades, the Sunni were dominated and ruled the Shia, and there was a lot of animosity between the two groups. And you had militias of both Shia and Sunni. And when we went into Iraq, yes, we overthrew the regime. We disbanded the army. And as a result, you didn't have a government to police and secure the area. So what happened? You had Shia militia attacking Sunnis and Sunni militia attacking Shia. It was a rather unstable, violent situation. It still is. Only in the extent of the degree of the violence has anything changed. Now, I've given this background in the past show, so I'm not going to get into depth on this, but the fundamental thing you need to understand is which nation is Arab, which nation is Persian, and the Persian nation is Iran. That's an easy one to understand. But the two nations where have the most Shia are Iran and Iraq, but you also have, through the Middle East, a number of other nations, usually small, like Bahrain, where the Shia are roughly, again, 65 to 75%. And I'm not going to go country to country, but it's important to understand the divides here. How do people divide up? First, it's on whether they're Arab or Persian. Second is, are they Sunni and Shia. And third is what specific sect of, for example, Sunni they are, whether they're Wahhabis, they're different sects. Now, what's happening in the Arabs, in the Arab Sunnis in the area feel directly threatened by Iran. And they also no longer really trust President Obama and the United States to protect them against Iran. I did an entire show on trust, and that is coming out clearly, that the leadership in these countries feel that President Obama is siding with the Iranian regime. Now, you can agree or disagree about that, but that's their perception. That's what they believe. That's what they think. So they feel threatened. And they believe that Iran is trying to and is going to attack them. Now, why would they do that? Well, the answer is simple: oil. Iran and Iraq have a lot of oil, about 10% of the world's reserves in terms of petroleum. But the biggest reserves are in Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. And if you look at a map, Iran and Iraq, as well as Syria, are to the north of Saudi Arabia. So from the north, they're directly threatened by the Shia and the Iranians, but they're also threatened by a group that's been in the news, the Islamic State, or ISIS, or ISIL. There are a number of abbreviations. They call themselves the Islamic State. And here's an important point. They are Sunni. They're fundamentalist. And they want to overthrow the regime in Iraq because they're Shia, as well as the regime, the Assad regime in Syria, because they're Shia. Actually, they're Alawite, but that's a sect of Shia. It's one way to think about it. But here is an important point. The Islamic State also wants to overthrow, for example, the kingdom or Saudi Arabia, because they view that the Saudi family, royal family, is corrupt. So Saudi Arabia is definitely threatened primarily by Iran and the Shia, but also by the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. The Saudis and the royal family are getting nervous. And the other thing you need to understand is the oil is primarily, not entirely, but primarily on the east coast of Saudi Arabia. In other words, right across from Iran and directly south of Iraq. And that's the prize. The prize is who controls that oil. That's why over the decades, the kingdom of Saudi Arabia has purchased significant amount of arms from the United States and countries in Europe, aircraft, tanks, vehicles. However, it's still a rather small force. And they have relied on the United States as an ally to protect them against other regimes in the area. In the past, that has been the Iraqi regime under Saddam Hussein, and now the Islamic Republic of Iran that are Shia. So the Arab League had a meeting, and there are several dozen countries, I forget the exact count, and what they're proposing to do is set up an armed force. It's going to take them probably several months, if not a year, to establish this force that would be used to counter either Iran, primarily Iran and the Shia. And you need to understand, Iran uses proxies. For example, in Lebanon and Syria, their proxy is a group called Hezbollah. They're Shia. They're Shia fighters, but what they do is provide them weapons, money, training, and it's that group that in the past has attacked Israel, but is now trying to overthrow this group is supporting Assad, but trying to go after Al-Qaeda in Syria, as well as the Islamic State that's in Syria, as well as in Iraq. You need to look at a map. I'm trying to give you the big picture first. So once this force is set up, it is definitely will be a counter to the efforts of Iran to dominate the region. But what's propelling or energizing this is the fact that the perception is the United States is siding with Iran, is in the process of signing an agreement that ultimately could lead to Iran getting a nuclear weapon, if not immediately, 10 years or more out. And the Saudis, because of the revenue they get from selling petroleum, have in the past, for example, supported the efforts of Pakistan, which is a Sunni nation, not in the immediate vicinity, but it's near Saudi Arabia. Pakistan is actually, if you look at a map, directly on Pakistan's western border is Iran, but not too far away is Saudi Arabia. So Pakistan is not that far from Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia in the past has funded Pakistan's efforts, nuclear program. And Pakistan has a nuclear program. Now, again, no one knows the exact number of weapons. It's estimated they got at least 100. And the reason Pakistan has these weapons is to counter India. Now, Pakistan, the Shia are a minority. They're about 10 to 15%. The majority are by far Sunnis. So the Saudi Arabia is comfortable with Pakistan. Pakistan has a strong army, but it also has nuclear weapons. It has nuclear weapons because India is on its northeastern border, and India has nuclear weapons as well. Where did Pakistan get the nuclear weapons? Primarily from China in terms of the design, and they were able to enrich uranium because a gentleman, Pakistani, stole the plans for centrifuges that are used to actually get the enriched uranium. Now, Saudi Arabia many years ago bought Chinese rockets that can hit Iran. They're not very accurate. They're more like 1950, 1960 vintage. But if you can put a nuclear weapon on it, which you can, you don't need to be that accurate. If you have a nuclear device, that is the weapon you're trying to explode over your enemy. They have over 100 of these rockets. They have a launching sites for them. And supposedly these rockets can carry a nuclear weapon that was designed by China. Now, what's come out is, and no one knows the specifics because guess what? Pakistan's not talking and certainly Saudi Arabia's not talking. But there have been reports that over the years, Saudi Arabia has purchased a number of those nuclear weapons. They're still in Pakistan in storage. But at some point in time, should Saudi Arabia believe that Iran has nuclear weapons and is threatened by them, those nuclear weapons will be transferred from Pakistan into Saudi Arabia and placed on these rockets. And the primary targets are Iran and Israel. So what's driving Saudi Arabia and the Arab League and the nations in the Arab League to organize and fight back against Iran is the perceived threat that Iran is the problem. They're stirring up Shiites in their nation. And I need to say one word because it doesn't come across until you've talked to someone or of either branch. The Sunnis do not consider Shiites Muslims. They think they're apostates, someone that used to believe in Islam, but now have their own little sect and they've disavowed Islam. Now, if you talk to the Shiites, they feel the same way. So they both really hate each other. And that is the hostility between people of same religion. It is Islam, but it's two distinct branches of it. Where again, the Shiites are primarily in Iran and in Iraq, and the Sunnis are in the other Arab nations, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Pakistan, Afghanistan. So what am I leading up to? We're already having a clash of Islamic sects, religious sects. And this will lead to a war in the Middle East, an Islamic sectarian war. In other words, a religious war. And people are picking sides. And it's not hard to see what side people are going to pick. If you're an Arab and a Sunni, you'll pick one side. If you're a Persian and or a Shiite, you'll pick another. And we're looking at a regional war. Right now, it's somewhat confined to specific areas. But could this easily be a very violent and prolonged war. It's not going to be over quick. It might take many years. It's going to take a lot of time just to build up this force. But what should be the United States' position? That's the real crux of this problem. Should the United States take sides? Should the United States intervene? Should they intervene to what extent? If you listen to past shows, I'm not for military intervention in this Middle East conflict. As far as I'm concerned, it's not our fight. Now, I quickly need to qualify this. We have allies in the Middle East. Our first ally is Israel. Our second ally is Saudi Arabia. And both countries in the past have fought each other. But today, at least to fairly recently, it would be safe to say that the United States is still allies with those two countries. Now, one other group that I think we could be allies with is the Kurds in Iraq. The Kurds are Sunni, but they're not Arab. They're Kurds. I'm all for selling arms to our allies and providing a limited amount of training so they get up to speed on using those weapons and to maintain that alliance. And it's one we've had for many years. We've had ups and downs. Right now, both Israel and Saudi Arabia simply don't trust President Obama and his representatives. And that's making him nervous because they think this administration is siding with Iran. We're going to find out fairly quickly, if not tomorrow, in the coming weeks or months, whether or not the so-called U.S. nuclear deal with Iran is as bad as everyone is saying. I think it's going to be maybe even worse. Because if it is that, that will only confirm the suspicions of our two allies, Israel and Saudi Arabia, that we have picked sides. I don't think we should pick sides, but I do think we need to support our allies. And in effect, that is picking sides. Under no circumstances would I, for example, side with the Islamic Republic of Iran, nor for that matter with the Islamic State. They're beyond the pale as far as I'm concerned, and the same goes to the Assad regime in Syria. And Iran's proxy there that's helping the Assad regime, namely the Hezbollah. And that needs to be clearly stated by the president. So there's no doubts. I don't think he's going to change our allies' minds. The damage has already been done. The perception is the United States is taking sides and they're supporting the Shia, both in Iraq, primarily in Iraq, but also Iran. And that does not sit well with the Arab League and the countries in the Arab League and the ones that are the wealthiest is Saudi Arabia because of the oil, which is directly threatened by both the Islamic Republic of Iran and the Islamic State. That's the national interest. You always hear, they'll always say, well, what's the United States has an interest in the country. Well, invariably, the interest is energy, specifically petroleum and natural gas. That's the only reason we're there and involved with the Middle East. Now, where I agree with Obama is I don't want to see the United States re-entering this area with hundreds of thousands of troops. It didn't turn out well the first time. It'll never turn out well for the simple reason most Americans, including our military, don't understand the culture, don't understand the religious history, and the fact you have two groups that are diametrically opposed. They hate each other and they're killing each other. And they've been doing this for decades. It's nothing new. It's gone up and down in terms of its intensity. And I don't want U.S. soldiers, men and women, being in the middle of it. That's what we're talking about. And I believe the majority of the American people feel the same way. They'll quickly say, well, I think we should bomb the Islamic State. Well, that's nice, but that's not a strategy. Because ultimately, if you want to destroy, for example, the Islamic State, who does that benefit? I'll tell you who it benefits. And this is why the Sunnis think you're taking sides. It benefits first and foremost Iran, but also Iraq. Remember, the Islamic State used to be called Al-Qaeda in Iraq. That were, for practical purposes, defeated by General Petraeus and General Ordano in 2007 and 2008 under the surge. Many of those forces were killed or imprisoned, but now they're back. So we shouldn't be siding with Al-Qaeda under the new name of the Islamic State, nor should we be siding with the Shia. We should be helping Israel. I think we should be sending training and arms to the Kurds in Iraq. And yes, we should be supporting with intelligence and equipment Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia has a lot of money. They're happy to purchase it. But Saudi Arabia will shop for what it needs. Now, what it's really short of is troops. Population of Saudi Arabia is somewhere between 25 and 30 million people. The more larger country is Egypt, with over 70 million people. The last time I looked, I'm looking for Egypt's population. Yes, it's about 80 million. So you can see, in terms of population, Egypt can support a large army. The problem is they're a basket case in terms of the economy. So Saudi Arabia can buy an army by providing money to Egypt, and that's exactly what's going to happen here. Now, Iran, when I gave that, and Egypt is Sunnis, by the way. If you look at Iran, they're over 70 million people. So Iran and Egypt are comparable in size, but Iran, because it has oil and Egypt doesn't, has a better armed military. What's going to happen is Saudi Arabia will supply the money, and that will be used to provide the weapons, the munitions needed, the artillery shells, the ammunition, and any new equipment that's needed. And largely, Egypt will be supplying the military forces. So if Iran continues to use proxies and threaten Saudi Arabia or any other nation, that coalition of forces that are Arab and Sunni will go on the offensive, and that's what they're doing right now. They're bombing Shia in Yemen. And it's all about oil, it's all about power, it's all about who is controlling what. And the question is, for you and me, what should the United States government should be doing about this? I think it would be a big mistake reintroducing our troops. We can provide limited support in terms of equipment, training, and intelligence to those countries that we believe are still allies with us. And as of today, that is Israel, and that is Saudi Arabia and Jordan, and to a lesser extent, Egypt. What is President Obama going to do? Who knows? The suspicion is, and I tend to go along with it, he is siding with Iran, Islamic Republic of Iran. And there are rumors that he's about ready to throw Israel under the bus by supporting a two-state solution in the United Nations. I think if that is true, what he's doing, he's siding with Iran, tilting towards Iran, and is going to pursue this in the United Nations. He will get a backlash from the American people that will be breathless. They will not support it. Congress won't support it, whether it's in the House or the Senate. And should he do this, I think this will mean defeat for the Democratic Party in future elections, both for the House, the Senate, and the presidency. And I suspect he's going to do that, folks. I really do. We'll see. That's why I say that tomorrow, as well as in the coming weeks to the end of June, what you need to be watching is what President Obama is agreeing to in terms of an agreement on nuclear weapons with Iran. If what he is agreeing to is unacceptable, and from the leaks, I would say it is going to be unacceptable because the inspections and surveillances are not there, and the nuclear weapons infrastructure would still be there. It wouldn't be destroyed. Congress, under the Constitution, has a right to advise and consent on any treaty. This is, in effect, a treaty. And under our Constitution, whether the president likes it or not, Congress and the Senate have a role. So he can't unilaterally do this because the next president is going to reverse it. So there is a constraint on Obama. Time is running out on Obama. 22 months. And I think he is doing severe damage to the Democratic Party. It could get a lot worse. We'll see. But in the meantime, what you have to think about is, what should we do? Whose side are we on, and to what extent should we be supporting them? Provide the equipment, provide the training, provide the intelligence, but don't send ground troops. Don't get caught in a religious and ethnic conflict in the Middle East. Because when you literally go through the countries, and who would you side with? There are very few countries that you can positively say, I want to support, or a group of people. You know, I have reservations in terms of the Saudi royal family, but they have been allies for many, many years of the United States. But the relationship has been one of ups and downs, and right now it's at very much a low point. And I'm glad to see that the Arab League is starting to get its act together and is striking back. What disturbs me most, however, there are people in Congress, specifically the neoconservatives, that want to go back. They want to go back to the Middle East in Iraq and get involved all over again. That would be compounding the mistake. Mistakes were made. A lot of mistakes were made. But that's water under the bridge. You're supposed to learn from your mistakes. And I'm afraid the neoconservatives have not learned. And they want a much larger military, spend more and more money on the military, mainly to project power. And where's the primary place they want to project power? There's several, but the primary place is Saudi Arabia, it's the Middle East. You need a large Navy, Air Force, Army, a much larger of all three, if you're going to intervene in country after country after country. But I always bring it back to the point, and this point unfortunately is missed and is sort of denied. The United States is broke. It's broke. We have racked up a national debt of over $18 trillion. And unfunded liabilities of over $100 trillion. That's not sustainable. We have to get our financial house in order. And you don't do it by engaging in another war in the Middle East. And that's what those who are quick to say, let's get our troops over there, that's what this is turning out to be. We're talking a war here. I'm not seeing the leadership from the White House. And we could play an active part in helping the Sunnis form a coalition. But I don't think that's what the president wants. He definitely, where we agree, I know he doesn't want to send ground troops back. So if you truly want to contain, for example, the Islamic State, that's what's required. So the only ones truly that could stop the Islamic State is a coalition of other Sunnis. But their first priority is to counter the Shia in Iraq and Iran. Only when that is clearly achieved will they seriously consider going after the Islamic State. I'm looking at the time, and I need to wrap it up, but I want to at least get to, briefly, the nuclear talks that are going on right now, and I'm sure we're going to hear some breaking news tonight or tomorrow about what, if anything, the United States, the Iran, and the members of the Security Council plus Germany have agreed in terms of a framework. I hope that these negotiations break down. Either the Iranians walk or the Europeans and the United States walk. I don't know what's going to happen. But I will say this. Once it's firm, specifically disclosed, let's assume they have, quote, a deal. A so-called framework for a deal. Once the details are clearly spelled out, that is when I think it's going to hit the fan. Because if it's really as a lousy deal as many are strongly suspecting it is, Congress will overwhelmingly say no, the American people will say no, and it will become abundantly clear to the Iranians that whatever deal they think they got is not worth the paper it's printed on and will be repudiated by the next president. And I'm assuming it'll be a Republican. Now, if it's Hillary Clinton, that's another matter. But we'll see. We'll see probably tomorrow or the next day. I'll have better information. Now, I can't get into I don't have much to say about the third story, except I support Mike Pence and the people of Indiana for going forward with their version of the Religious Freedom Reestablishment Act. And the one thing I need to point out that I didn't, because of all the negative publicity, and I really think this was, they protest too much. All the Indiana law did was, I won't say imitate, but reinforce both the federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act provisions as well as follow what other states have done. And what they're going to do is make clear the intent that it wasn't intended to discriminate against gays, lesbians, and transsexuals. I think once that minor change is made, and I think it is a minor change, this firestorm will quickly peter out. I think this was primarily the media and the Democratic Party trying to make an issue of this when it shouldn't be an issue at all, because it really was the Democrats that were responsible for the Religious Freedom Restoration Act of 1993. It was progressives and liberals that got this passed and got it signed with Republican support, and that's all what Indiana was trying to do. And all the gay and lesbian activists or trying to make this into something that it isn't. It's very similar to what the left, the lying lunatic left, did in Ferguson, raising their hands and say, don't shoot. That was a lie. That was a false narrative. The guy never raised his hand and never said, don't shoot. He attacked the cop, and the cop defended himself and killed him when his attacker put down his head and charged him. It's another attempt by the media, the television networks primarily, to perpetuate another lie and to confuse the American people. And I think within a couple of days, it won't be a news story anymore. Because I think what the Indiana legislature will do is make a quick change to add a few sentences. And that should more than satisfy anyone that has an open mind on this. I think people of faith, no matter what their religion, are being attacked by government activists, primarily socialists, leftists, progressives, liberals, many of them that are atheists, agnostic, don't believe in religion, or their religion is their politics. And they're trying to force people of faith to do things that are against their religion. So with that, I'll sign off. Stay tuned, though, because at least one, if not all three of these stories, there will be updates and there will be revisions. And I think all three stories, or at least two of them, will be in the news for at least the next several months. With that, my name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College.